Today's daf in Masechet Yoma, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Aleph. And we're up to the last word on the fourth line. And let me just remind you, we're in the middle of trying to figure out if we can bring a raya to how to deal with Rebbe Eliezer's question. He wanted to know whether if we have a tmura, the Kohen tries to make a tmura on the Eloi Shel Aharon, is it considered to be a korban yochid, or is it considered to be a korban hashutafim? Why would it be called a korban hashutafim? Because of the fact that Echov HaKohenim are mischaprim. So if Echov HaKohenim are mischaprim, isn't that ipso facto a raya that they are the one who can make a tmura? Because it says that the mischaprim are isim tmura. No, because the question was whether the type of kapora that they're getting is called mikviuta or is it called mikufya? Is it something that is actually given to them as part of this carbon, the ikar carbon? If it is, so then enochinami, they should be able to make they should be the ones that are mischaprim and therefore cannot make a tmura because they're shutfim, and shutfim can't make a tmura. Or is it just mikufya? Mikufya means it's corollary. The corollary to his own, Aaron's own kapora, so then it's not a real ownership. And if it's not a real ownership, so then maybe he's the only one who owns it, and therefore it would be called a korban yochid entirely, not shel shutfim, in which case there would be no problem of not being able to make a tmura because of the dual ownership. But that was the question that we had yesterday. And we ended up, if you recall, trying to bring a raya from the very interesting contrast that we had between the dinim of the Iker Zevach on the one hand and the dinim of Tmura on the other hand. And we tried to find a matching Zevach that could have all of the listed dinim. And that would have included that the Zevach would have been able to make a Tmura. And the only case that we found was the case of the partial Kohen Gadol. So Reb Sheshes came along and he said, maybe it's not the partial Kohen Gadol. Maybe it's actually the aisle of the Kohen Gadol. The aisle of the Kohen Gadol is an aila, and there is certainly no one else that's involved in any kind of kapora, and that's entirely a korban yochid. So why would he not be able to make a tmura on it? And then we showed that there were other approaches as well. But Reb Sheshes' approach was to call it the elosh of Kohen Gadol as opposed to the par. So the Gemara today wants to know, isn't there a simpler solution? Ula Reb Sheshes, Adamukim La, so now this is the last word on the fourth line, as I said. Ula Reb Sheshes, Adamukim La Be'elo Shel Aharon, Lukma BePesach. Well, don't you have, a perfect candidate. You're looking for a korban that is a korban yochid, that's Doches HaShabbos, Doches HaTumah, and is also able to make a tmura, and that would be the korban Pesach. So why did we need to find the only korban we could come up with was either the Elo Shel Aharon or the Paro Shel Aharon, which had all these other issues with them? Take a korban Pesach. There you go. So a korban Pesach is owned individually. It's obviously Dorcha Shabbos and Tumah. It's like half of the Masechet HaPesachim was about that. And why would you not be able to make a Tumura if you had your own private korban Pesach that wasn't owned by just more than one person? You had your own. So it's a korban yochid. Answers the Gemara, because Reb Sheshes holds there's no such thing. You cannot own a korban Pesach all by yourself. Why? Because Kasovar, Ein Shochatina Pesach al HaYachid. His shita is the same as Reb Yehuda. Remember, Reb Yehuda said back in Masechet Pesachim, he darshened the pasuk, Lo tuchal lizboach et haPesach be'echad sharecha, to be Lo tuchal lizboach et haPesach be'echad. So you can't have a single person being the bialim on a korban Pesach, which means you have to have at least one shutav. But if you have at least one shutav, then you can't make a tmura, because the din is that only a yochid is a tmura. So therefore, he was left with no other option. Says the Gemara, wait a minute, there's one other option. The other option would be a Pesach Sheni, right? A Pesach Sheni would seem to have all of those rules, but it does not have the limitation of not being able to be brought by an individual. The whole point is it can be brought by an individual. So why not use Pesach Sheni? Why not use Pesach Sheni? Because How do you know that Pesach Sheni is Dochi Tuma? Mi Dochi Tuma? We're about to see that there's a big machlokas about if a Pesach Sheni is Dochi Tuma. And remember, in order to satisfy the requirements of the contrast that we were making between the Zevach versus the Tmura, when we thought it was the Tmura of that Zevach, was that the Zevach itself would be Dochi Tuma and the Tmura wouldn't. So if you do not hold that the Pesach Sheni is Dochi Tuma, it doesn't fit the bill. And that's why he couldn't have used the Pesach. He was stuck with Elo Shel Aaron. Omale Ravuna Bered Rav Yishua L'Rava. I'm very confused. If you don't mind, can we get back to the daf yesterday? Now, the daf yesterday, remember, we had Rabbi Meir's complaint to the Tanakhama in Temura. We had Rabbi Yaakov's complaint to the Tanakhama in Temura. Remember, let me just remind you what that was about. So the Tanakhama over there in the Mishnah had explained that a Korban Tzibur is Dorcha Shabbos Vetuma, and a Korban Yochid is not Dorcha Shabbos Vetuma. Now, the problem that Rabbi Meir had with that was that he said, well, I don't think that that's a very good way to define the difference, because after all, the Par of Yom HaKippurim, the Chavite Kohen Gadol, and the Korban Pesach, all of them are considered to be a Korban Yochid, and nonetheless, the Docha Shabbos Betumah. Okay, so I understand. A Korban Pesach, of course, is a Korban Yochid. That makes sense. But then we had Rabbi Yaakov complaining with the other side. And basically, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yaakov were saying the same thing. They just took on different parts. So Rabbi Meir was saying, look, don't try to tell me that a Korban Yochid is not Docha Shabbos, because here's the Korban Pesach that is Docha Shabbos. And Rabbi Yaakov said, and don't try to tell me that a Korban Tzibur is Docha Shabbos, because, and he brings an example of a Korban Chagiga. So he says, the Korban Chagiga is a Korban Tzibur, but it's not Docha Shabbos. Now, I mean, I don't understand. What's the difference? A Korban Chagiga is a Korban that is brought on Yontif by an individual. A Korban Pesach is a Korban that's brought for Yontif by an individual. And what's the difference? Why are we calling one of them? When Rabbi Meir wants to look for an example, he finds a very convenient example of a Korban Yochid that is Deicha Shabbos Vetumah in the Korban Pesach. And when Rabbi Yaakov wants to find an example of a Korban Tzibur that's not Deicha Tumah, he brings the Korban Chagiga and calls it a Korban Tzibur. I mean, that's sort of a little bit sneaky, because the Korban Chagiga and the Korban Pesach are the same thing, essentially, in terms of whether it's a Korban Yochid or Korban Tzibur. So why in the world are we calling the Korban Pesach a Korban Yochid and the Korban Chagiga a Korban Tzibur? That's our problem. So let's take a look at that insight. How come the Tana that was describing all of this, Maishna, the Pesach, calls a Korban Yochid, and then Rabbi Yaakov goes ahead, and he calls the Chagiga a Korban Tzibur? Why are we calling a Chagiga a Korban Tzibur? Is it because, Bishum Da'ati B'Knufia? Is it because that it comes at the Rega when everybody's coming up together to bring a Korban? The Pesach is also brought B'Knufia. So what's the difference between them? Yes, but remember, the Pesach is including the Pesach Sheni. And the Pesach Sheni is not brought during Yom Tov B'Knufia. It's brought a month later by whomever it is that needs to bring it. I don't know how many people are bringing it. You know, 10 people? I mean, whatever. It's not called B'Knufia. That's the difference. Oh, that's interesting. So in other words, what you're telling me is that you are including in the words Pesach as a Korban Yochid, that is Docha Shabbos Vetuma, you're including Pesach, both Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. That's what you're saying. And therefore, I cannot call it a Korban Tzibur. I want to call it a Korban Yochid. Excuse me, but if that's the case, then Im Kein, says he, Yehi Docha Ta Shabbat Veta Tuma. You're basically saying that a Pesach Sheni is Docha Shabbos and Tuma? Is that what you're saying? Omar, like, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. There is a Mandi Omar that holds that a Pesach Sheni is Docha both Shabbos and Tuma. I hold like that Mandi Omar. So fine, I'm perfectly consistent. Therefore, since when I mention the Korban Pesach, I'm including Pesach Sheni, and Pesach Sheni is not Asi B'Knufia, so because of that, I say, here is a Korban Yochid that's not Asi B'Knufia, and it's Doche Shabbos V'Tumo Mashenkein, its Tumura is not. There you go. Sorry, but Tumura, forget that. I threw that in because of the beginning of the Sukkah. Forget that cut. It's considered to be a Korban Yochid. Okay. Now, there is such a machlokas. Here's the machlokas, the Tanya. Pesach Sheni doche at Shabbat, but not at Tatuma, says the Tanakama. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, not true. It's doche both Shabbat and Tuma. So now, my time at the Tanakama, why does the Tanakama say that a Pesach Sheni is doche Shabbos, but not Tuma? I mean, isn't that a little strange? If b'moado, which is what it says, kuchokukata Pesach, which includes all the dinim b'moado, so if B'moado is applicable to Pesach Sheni vis-a-vis Shabbat, and it's Docha Shabbat, so then why would it not be Docha Tumah? What difference could there possibly be between the Dinim of Shabbos and Tumah and the Pesach Sheni? So what would be the Svara? My time at the Tanakama, who says it's not Docha Tumah and it's only Docha Shabbos? Omar Lecha, so the Tanakama says, look, it's ridiculous to say that it's Docha Tumah. Why are you bringing the Korban Pesach Sheni, my dear? Because you were Tomei in Pasach Rishon, right? So the Torah is giving you a special carbon to avoid bringing a carbon Pesach Petuma. So does it make sense to bring the carbon that is brought to avoid bringing the carbon Pesach Petuma to bring it Petuma? Come on, that's crazy. So it must be, I mean, it's only logical that it will not be Docha Tuma. It's Docha Shabbos, yes. So Mipnei Tuma Dechito V'yeaseh Petuma. If the whole point of bringing it was to avoid Tumah, does it make sense to say that now I should bring it to Tumah? And Rabbi Yehuda says, look, you can't use your sense of what's appropriate. That doesn't define the halacha. The Torah says, kekol chukata pesach yasu oto, okay? Kekol chukata pesach means whatever the din is of Pesach Rishon, that's the din of a Pesach Sheni. What's the din of Pesach Rishon? Afilu betumah. So now you're asking me, but what's the logic in it? I don't understand. If he's trying to bring a carbon to avoid Tumah, how would he be bringing it to Tumah? What's your big problem? I don't understand you. Look, the Torah is giving him another chance. The Torah wants him to be able to bring it to Tyra if it's possible. Lo zacha, if he wasn't zocha to bring it to Tyra, and there's no Torah Kohanim, and all the Kohanim are Tameh, so then that's the din. Ya'asenu b'tumah, the same thing as the Pesach Rishon. Just because the Torah gives him an additional opportunity to bring it b'tayra, therefore he should miss the Pesach completely if it happens to be that all the Karnim are tameh. Why does that follow? Therefore, he lost his opportunity. He wasn't zeicher, but he certainly was given an opportunity to try to bring it b'tayra. Fine. Says the Gemara, v'tepukle, isn't there a simple solution to Rebbe Elazar's question? Rabbi Elazar asked, let's get back to what we've been dealing with. Rabbi Elazar asked, is the par of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, is it something that is owned by the other Kohanim, and therefore it's a shutafut and there is no tmura, or not? Is it owned entirely by Aaron and the other Kohanim do not have a share in it? So I think I know the answer. The answer is very simple. Three times the Torah stresses, par hachatat asher lo. Okay, remember the first pasuk that we had, and that it said, v'ikriv aron et par hachatat asher lo, v'chiper ba'ado ba'ad beito. And then when it repeats, that was the first vidui. Then it repeats five psukim later, the same thing. V'ikriv aron et par hachatat asher lo, v'chiper ba'ado ba'ad beito. That was the second vidui, v'erkav ha'kohanim. Again, mentioning Asher Lo. I know it's Asher Lo. Why do we keep repeating Asher Lo? If the first pasuk in Achrimot told me that Bezot Yavoa Arona Lakodesh Bepar Ben Bakar Lachatat, I understand that it's his. So if you repeat three times, you want to tell me, okay, now walk over to your par, you know the par that's his, and say Vidui. And then another time you say the same thing. And he should walk over to the par. You know which par, the par that's specially his. and he should say vidui. And then at the end of the pasuk, again you repeat, when it comes to the shechita of the par, it says v'shachat et parachatat, you know which one, asher lo. I mean, why do you think it's saying three separate times the one which is his? So the Braita explains that those three times are to make it absolutely clear that nobody else can have any kind of ownership in purchasing that par. Because we learn in the Braita like this. The first time it says parachatat asher lo, that tells me that mishalohu mevi velo mishal tzibur. First one tells me he's got to pay for it. Okay. You might think he can't be mevi mishal tzibur. I understand that tzibur don't get a kapora. But maybe if Echav HaKohanim pay for it, since they do get a kapora, shari Echav HaKohanim mitchaprim bo, so they should be paying for it as well. Talmud Lomar therefore repeat the second time, the one that he bought, asher lo. Okay, so you might think he's supposed to pay for it. But what about if the other people pay for it, b'diavad? So remember, unless something is repeated in the dinim of kochim, it's not considered to be ma'akev. And therefore, you would have thought that if Echav HaKohanim pay for it, that im hevi kasher. Talmud Lomar shuv, therefore it says a third time, parachatat asher lo. And that is in order to provide shana alav hakatuv. The pasuk is repeating it specifically to tell me that it's le'ikuva and you will not be yotze in the event that you do that. Wow. Okay, so that seems to actually leave us no option, right? It means that Echav HaKohanim have absolutely no share in that carbon whatsoever, and therefore there's no problem of there being a shutafut. It's a carbon yachid, and that answers Rebbe Lozer's question. If it's a carbon yachid, then it can certainly be make a tmura, because there's no part to the other kohanim. That's what it appears. Says the Gemara, well, you got to ask yourself this question. If you really believe that this is the fact, how in the world could Echav HaKohanim get any kapora from it? Even Mikufya, how could they get a kapora? In order to get a kapora, it has to be your carbon on some level. And if you're telling me that the pasuk is repeating three times to make sure that I don't get any idea that it's my carbon, so how can I have any kapora? I mean, you've got to explain that to yourself, don't you? If they have absolutely zero kinyan, so what possible rights do they have for a kapora afilo mikufya, as the Bach adds? Ela. So what are you going to answer? You're going to have to answer that the point is that when the Torah said v'chiper ba'ado uba'ad beto, which is a reference to Beit Aharon, that the Torah is giving them part of that carbon, even though they don't pay for it, right? In terms of the kapora, they are considered to be enough of an owner, of a participant, in order to get a kapora mikufya. So then if that's the case, if you have to admit that, it might be that the Torah gave them even enough to have a kapora mikvya. So you don't know the answer, so we're left with the same question that we had before. And that's Rebbe Lozer's question. Is it, in the end, a mikufya kind of kapora, or is it in the end a mikiva kind of kapora? And that will define the difference in the level of ownership that the Torah gave them, granted them, even without paying. And that in turn will define whether they're considered to be the mitchaprim and therefore owners in terms of tmura and therefore cannot make the tmura, or whether they are just mikufya and they're not considered as owners and therefore Aaron can make a tmura. So we're still left with the issue of Shiny Begaza, the Aaron, the Afke, Rachmona Gabi, Echav HaKohanim, even as the Bach adds, even the Mischapra Mikiva, to allow them to have a Kavua Kapora, and maybe therefore you cannot make a Tmura, and therefore we're left with, we don't know. So we still are hanging on this question. And now we have our special Kapitan who is wearing his Kapitan's outfit today. Thank you, beautiful, beautiful Capitan. Beautiful, beautiful Gavi as well. You know, I got a gorgeous view at the same time. It's hard. I got one eye on the view and one eye on the Capitan shirt. And they're right next to each other on my screen. Okay, so give it to us, Capitan. And so we're up to the next stage. The next stage is the Kohen Gadol is now walking into the Kodesh HaKodashim. How does he walk into the Kodesh HaKodashim? So to give you a little bit of a background on this, once upon a time, in the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim. That wall was a full amma thick and was very high. So the outside of the wall, as it will turn out, was actually on the front of the wall was 30 amas, and behind the wall was 20 amas, and the front of the wall was only Kodesh, but behind the wall was the Kodesh HaKodashim, and the question was, what about the thickness of the wall, which was called the Traxin? Traxin, according to Rashi, is made out of a word which means inside and out. So Traxin. According to Tosis, Traxin means an entryway, like Trokugale, slam the doors. In any event, what was the din of the Traxin itself? As it will turn out, we don't know. Was the Traxin considered to be the same Kedusha as the front part? Or was the Traxin considered to be the same Kedusha as the back part, which was the higher Kedusha? In the second Beis HaMikdash, they were unable to build the wall because of the additional height. And they could not build a wall that was only one amma thick that could be 40 ammas high. It would collapse. And therefore, they had no choice but to substitute for a wall. They had to substitute two curtains, one at the beginning of that amma and one at the inside of that amma. And that was the Traxin. Why didn't they just put up one? Because they couldn't put up one because they didn't know where to put it. Because if the Traxin itself was part of the Kodesh HaKodashim Kedusha, then they would have had to put it at the end of the 30 Amas in. And then starts the next Kedusha. But if it was part of the Kodesh, then they would have to put it 31 Amas in. So because of that, they made two curtains that covered that additional Amma. And the Kohen Gadol, when he came in, he would not walk through a door in the Traxin, which was covered by a small parochet. Instead, he would walk in the area between the two parochot. Now, between the two parochot, what they did was that they had the inside parochet open a little bit on the northern side so that he would walk in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the north. And on the southern side, it had a little bit of an open on the outside so that he would walk into the area between the two parochot from the south. So this is one approach. That means that in order to get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he would have to approach from the south, go into the south, make a right turn, continue on to the end, and then make a left turn at the northern side into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's if you hold like the Shita in our Mishnah that says that we're dealing with two parochot. There's also another Shita that holds that there was only one parochet. It was open from the northern side. So the Mishnah begins, as our Kapitan has begun. Hayam mahalech beichal ad shemagia lebin shtei haparochot hamavdilot ben hakodesh ubin hakodeshim, kodesh hakodeshim ubinim ama. So he would walk through the Heichal until he got to the opening of the two parochot that would be the separators between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he would then go into the area between them, which is Bnei Amma. There was one Amma between them, and he would walk between them until he got in. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says there was only one parochet, and we're going to be talking about that very soon. And according to Rabbi Yossi, there was no way that he would go in between them because there was no between them. Shenemar v'hivdila haparochet lechem ben hakodesh ben kodesh hakodashim, as it says beferish in the pasuk. The parochet, that means the singular parochet, should be mavdil lechem between the kodesh and the kodesh hakodashim. Where do you get two parochets? Says the Gemara, that's a very good point. The Torah says one parochet. How do you get away with making two parochets? And the Rabbanan answer, Rabbanan Amri Lecha, Hani mili b'mishkan. That was only in the Mishkan where everything was made with parochets. But in the Mishkan, the Migdash Sheni, we got into a problem because we know that in the Migdash Rishon, we had the additional Amah of the Traxin. But in the Migdash Sheni, we could not build that Traxin. So the Migdash Sheni given to Lohavi Amah Traxin, and it was only in the Migdash Rishon, Hudavoy, the Istapkalu L'Rabbanan B'Kedushata. The Rabbanan did not know what the din was about the Kedusha of that Traxin, whether it was part of the Kedusha Kelifnim of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or whether it was part of the Kedusha Mibachutz of the Kodesh. So because of that, they didn't know where to put the parochet. Do you put it at the beginning of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or do you put it at the end of the Kodesh? I mean, at the what did I say? You put it at the end of the 30 Amos, at the end of 31 Amos is the question. So, therefore, they had to make two. So, turn around, Bona. Now, we'll see that it makes a difference which shita you hold as to how it was that the Kohen walked through the Heichal to get to the Kodesh HaKadosh. And here we find that there's a machlokas. So according to one shita, it says that Bein HaMizbeach LaMenorah Haya Mahalech, the Rebbe. So now, according, where exactly, let's try to imagine again what it looks like so that we can understand what we're talking about. When you walk in directly from the opening to the Heichal, which is inside of the ulam, remember there's the porch on the outside, you walk into the inside, immediately in front of you is the Mizbeach HaZahav, which was put smack bang in the middle of the room. To your right, you are facing the north, and therefore you will be looking to the right along the wall at the Shulchan. To your left, you're facing the south, and therefore you will be looking in the south towards the menorah. If you hold that there were two parochots, then the opening of the outside parochet was at the southern extreme where you entered at the side, walked all the way along back up to the north, turned left, and went into the Kodesh HaKadosh. Now, the question, if there are only one parochet, and we haven't talked about how you would walk in then. As it turns out, everybody agrees that where you walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim from the parochet is definitely on the northern side. The question is whether you first had to go into a southern side in order to get between them. That's a different issue. So now you would think that this gives you a very clear-cut trajectory. Because if you're going to be walking to the northern side, so then you have two possibilities. Either you can go up to the northern wall immediately and walk along the wall facing the opening, and this is going to get you directly in, if there's only one parochet, or you walk to your left, and you have your choice again. Maybe you could walk right along the wall, so that you go right into the opening, or you could walk on a diagonal towards there. Same thing would be true if you were turning right. You could either walk on a diagonal between the Mizbeach and the Shulchan, and then behind the Shulchan, you finally get to the opening. So you have, basically, there's four possibilities here, depending on the Shita, and depending on whether we like the idea of you're walking along the wall. Now, let's take into consideration, first of all, Alon has asked, don't we always turn to the right? Well, if we always turn to the right, we're going to have a real problem getting to the bathroom if the door is to your left. Because as you can imagine, walking around and around to try to get to the bathroom on the left side will leave you no option but not to use the bathroom. And therefore, the answer to Alon is that we only turn to the right when we're going around something. But we don't turn to the right when we need to turn to the left. Okay, so this solves a very serious problem for Jews who need to get to a bathroom where the door is to the left. All right. So now in this situation, what are the issues? So one issue is if you're going to walk along the wall directly on the northern side, you're going to be looking into the Kodesh HaKadosh because the parochet was a little bit, there was a golden button that held it open wide enough for you to be able to walk through. So you couldn't push it. I mean, this thing weighed thousands of pounds. So there was no way to push it. So it was held open. You walked into it. If you'd be walking along your the right-hand side, which is to the north, then you would be looking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the entire way that you were walking, which is not very tsanua. So it makes more sense to take a diagonal cut between the Mizbeach and the Shulchan, and then at the very last minute you arrive at the corner, and it's at the corner that you enter in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that would be the most tsanua fashion to do it. On the other hand, if you're going along the left, which is to the south where the menorah was, so you have your options. We don't seem to see a reason to take a diagonal any more than to walk directly along the wall. So we're going to talk about that as we go. Okay, so now what happens is that over here, it turns out that we have a machlokas in precisely how it is that we walk. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says that you walk between the Mizbeach and the menorah. So in other words, you turn left and you head towards the south, and you arrive at the doorway, that is to say, the opening of the Paroches, on the southern side after you pass the menorah and you're walking in the diagonal. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, no, you did, I agree you walk on a diagonal, not along the wall, but you turn to your right because you would have to go to the directly in to the northern side, because there's obviously, Rabbi Meir doesn't hold that there was a opening to the south. It was open to the north. So Ben Shulchan L'Mizbeach, and then there's yet a third shita, and the third shita is V'yesh Omrim, that you walked along the entire northern wall between the wall and the Shulchan. And that way you were facing the opening into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the entire way. Okay, who's the Yesh Omrim? Omer of Chistawal, I mean, Rabbi Yossi is the one who holds that the Petach is B'tzafon, right? Because he holds there was only one parochet, and that one parochet opened up directly into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on the northern side. So he would be the one who holds you walk along the northern wall directly into the northern side. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, what good would it be to walk along the northern side? You're going to have to get to the south because there were two parochets, and that parochet was open to the Darom. So Pitcha B'Darom Koy. Wait a minute, then who does Rabbi Meir hold like? Rabbi Meir, he says you take a diagonal towards the north. Who does he hold like? Come on, Svirle. If he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, then why don't you take a diagonal to the south? Neil Rabbi Yehuda. And if he holds like Rabbi Yossi, so then why? Then I don't understand. So then go along the wall like Rabbi Yossi. No, no. He holds like Rabbi Yossi. The problem is you cannot walk along the wall. Why not? Because you bump into the Shulchanot. Remember that Shlomo HaMelech made 10 Shulchanot. So there was a machlokas. How were the 10 Shulchanot placed? So one man d'Yom holds they were placed from the northern side along their length in two rows. And that would mean that we had 10 full amos of Shulchanos. But the entire area of the Heichal was only 20 amos wide. And the Shulchan could not be in the south, even an inch of it. It needed entirely to be in the north, because it says to Beferish in the Pasuk, Atzelat Safon. So then that means the entire area was blocked by the five Shulchanos, each of which was two amas long, if you hold that they were north-south. So a lot of good it would do you to walk along the northern wall, when you, boom, you're going to bump into the Shulchan. So therefore, you had no choice but to take a diagonal, and you walk around the Shulchan to get to the north side. So you have to go between the Mizbeach and the Shulchanos and then turn north. That's why. So as he holds the Shulchanot, went from Tzafon to Darom, and because of that, Mavsik Eloi Shulchan velo Misayalei. You're going to bump into a Shulchan and we'll have no way of getting in. Or you know what? Maybe not. I mean, even if he held that the Shulchanot were not blocking because they were going from east to west, not from north to south. So you would have had room to walk along the wall, but it's not nice, Rabbi Meir holds. How could be walking along the wall when the entire time you're peeking into the Kodesh HaKadosh? It makes more sense to walk on diagonal, and at the very last part of your walk, you hit the end of the north where it's open, and then you're going in, so you have no choice. That's what you're meant to do. But otherwise, Mishum Shechina Lav Urach Ara, it is not appropriate, Lemea Lahade, to be just walking straight in like you're walking. I mean, it's like, you know, would you walk into someone's bedroom like that? It's just inappropriate. So because of that, they agree. Fundamentally, yes, the opening was on the northern side. But the question is, do I walk facing the opening or do I walk on a diagonal to get to the opening at the last minute? And what does Rabbi Yossi do about that? I mean, isn't it true that it's not really appropriate to walk along the entire way peeking into the Kodesh HaKadosh? Rabbi Yossi says, on the contrary. Chavivin Yisrael, shlo itzrichon hakatuv l'shliach. Remember what it was that Shlomo HaMelech said when he built the Beis HaMikdash, and he said that beautiful tefillah, the chinuch of the Beis HaMikdash. So one of the most amazing things that he says over there is that asher yedun ish nega levavo, any human being who knows his own heart and what is wrong in his heart, there's a nega in his heart, what should he do? Ufeirez kapav el habayit hazeh, let him lift up his arms to this building where the Shechina is Shaira. I don't understand. Shlomo HaMelech is building a Beis HaMikdash with all of the Inyonim of the Aveda, with Kayanim and Kayanim Gedalim, and that's tens of thousands of people are working there, and this is what he's talking about. And if a man knows his own depths of his pain, that he should individually put his arms out and speak to the Shechina. What about all of these people? What are they there for? So you see that that's the whole point that Shlomo HaMelech is making. Look at the Chavivas of Yisrael. All of this is all very nice for the Inyanim of the Karbanos, but when it comes to speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you do your own talking, baby. Talk. Speak. Speak from your heart. So if that's the case, what, the Torah is going to want somebody that they're sending in to do the Aveda who's got to sneak in around the corner? I told you to speak to me. What are you acting like you're a stranger? Amazing. Such an incredible thought. So because of that, since they don't need a shliach, so therefore it isn't even right to go walking around as if you can't go in. Fantastic different approach, according to Rabbi Yossi, about what is more appropriate. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, we'll just finish this line. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that you're walking towards the south, then why can't you walk along the wall to the south? I understand, according to Rabbi Meir, he says take the diagonal because you have no choice. But why does Rabbi Yehuda say take a diagonal? Why not walk along the wall? Because you're wearing big day lavan. That's all you need, is to walk along that wall, which is full of all of the soot from the menorah. And by the time you walk along that wall, you're going to have to change your clothes because of all of the soot along the wall from the menorah. So because of that, Mishachre Mane, since he's going to blacken his big day kahuna, he doesn't go near that wall. That's the last wall you'd want to walk along. If you're walking on the northern wall, fine. Everything is beautiful, clean, and shiny. But if you're walking between the menorah and the wall, not a very good idea. Okay, Rabosai, that is today's beautiful, beautiful daf. What a wonderful ending for the daf today. May we be zocha, in fact, to see that type of anaga of chavivas in everything that's going on around us.